everybody, this is Brian Dunaway, and you're listening to Comics Coast to Coast. This is episode number 25, and I have in the Skype studio with me today, all I've got is Justin Thompson, just me and Justin. Justin, how's it going?
That's right. Yeah, I'm doing fine, Brian. How are you doing?
I'm doing pretty good.
Okie dokie. Yep, we're without Tom tonight. This has been an incredibly hectic and busy week for all three of us, and I guess it has been so hectic and crazy for Brian that he couldn't even make it, or Tom, he couldn't even make it tonight.
Yeah.
But to be fair, we are recording this on a different night. We're recording this on Wednesday night. We usually record it on Thursday, right?
Yep. But we did make it. Me and Justin, we always show up, right? Stupid Tom.
We always show up. Sorry, everybody.
No, Tom is great. We did miss last week. What was last week? Was it Thanksgiving?
Something like that. Something where people ate a lot of stuff.
Yeah, it was just an excuse to take a break, wasn't it? Because we needed one. This is show 25. We needed a break. You know what I'm saying?
What's the deal with Thanksgiving? You know, it's like a holiday. Hey, here's a holiday where we eat a lot.
Yeah.
Well, as if we don't do that every single day.
Yeah, I know it.
I mean,
let's take 2 days off from work too.
Yeah, just to eat.
Let's be horrible. I know it is really a gluttonous time, though. You think about it. We spend all day one day eating it up, and then the next day we go out and spend all of our money. So yeah.
I think that's more American now than the 4th of July is.
That's true.
You know, I mean, inherently American and true to our culture than 4th of July.
That's right.
I don't know.
That's the truth.
Anyway.
Hey, I want to ask you something. This has been on my mind. It has nothing to do with comic strips, and I apologize for sidetracking here. But I just can't comprehend why we have all these sales on the day after Thanksgiving. Because they usually put the most prized things on sale, and they sell them for cost, practically, because they put everything on super sale. I just don't understand how selling something at almost cost all your best-selling items on one day benefits you. You would think that...
I know.
You would think it would be like better to spread it out and just sell it at regular price over, you know, X number of weeks because, you know, people are going every day looking, saying, I used to got this thing. No, we sold all of those on the day after Thanksgiving. For how much?
Oh, I know.
For practically our cost.
I was trying to figure that out, too.
Yeah.
All I can think of is that if they could get it open early enough and get a big enough crowd and make it crazy, it's almost to the equivalent of a stunt.
Yeah.
And if they can get lucky enough to make it wacky enough and crazy enough, they could get it on the news, and it's a whole lot of free advertising for the store.
Hmm.
That's really all I can think of is the stunt quality of it.
Yeah.
But I don't know. Have you ever worked in a place where you've had to be there on the day after Thanksgiving and deal with that?
Yes, I have. I've worked in retail. More than once. Service merchandise was probably the craziest one I did. You ever heard of service merchandise? It's kind of like
I have.
Yeah. Okay. Well, cool. Yeah. And of course they're shut down now. But I worked at one of those, and we had special deals, and we opened early. You know, I think we opened I don't think we opened at 5 like Walmart and all these guys do, but I think we opened like around 7 or so, which is way early for us.
Uh-huh.
7 o'clock, we can't be getting up, you know. But yeah. So, yeah, I've been involved with that, and it is a madhouse.
Huh. I've worked retail, but I don't ever recall doing that.
Yeah.
I think the last time I worked retail, I think it was in the, like, 92 or something. I worked at a bookstore in Manhattan, but I don't remember that kind of thing after Thanksgiving. I don't know.
Yeah.
I have no recollection of having to deal with that, but, boy, that would be tough.
I'm telling you. I'm going to tell a little bit of story here, too, while we're talking about shopping and things. This Christmas, I had given up on the getting a Wii because it's pretty much one of the most sought-after pieces of entertainment for our kids for this Christmas. And so I couldn't find one. So I said, okay, well, I'll settle for the Xbox 360 because it's the same price. And it does come with some arcade games and things. So I was like, okay, cool. So I'll go get that. I got one I think Tuesday before or Wednesday before that Thanksgiving. And so I decided to take it out that one night to make sure that it worked, because a couple of Christmases ago, I got a bunch of electronics for the kids, and half the crap didn't work. So I was a little concerned. So I tried it, turned it on. It was on for 5 minutes, and then all of a sudden it shut off, and there was a red ring on the front of the Xbox. I looked that up because I was pretty sure I'd read about this. the red ring of death, the power supply, the power buttons turns red, and it just dies. And it's basically a general hardware failure. So it had it for all of 5 minutes. I'm glad I tested it, because I would have been really mad if I got up Christmas morning and it did that. So end up taking that back to Wally World, Walmart, and I was going to go get the kids like a PlayStation 2 or some kind of crap, which is really sad. But I went to EB Games, and while I was there, the UPS man came in, and guess what he had? Three Wiis.
Herpes.
Herpes, yeah. He had three Wiis, so I bought one. I bought me a Wii. So the kids are going to get a Wii this Christmas. Woohoo! And
Do they know already, or are they going to hear it through the show?
No, I hope they can't hear me in there, because I'm trying not to talk too loud. But
well, that's cool.
Yeah, but then what I was going to say was, I considered purchasing one and taking it and selling it on eBay. And I said, you know what? That's not right. That's not nice. Because that's what's wrong with it now, is because you can't find them because everybody has purchased them and they're selling them eBay. And are you still there, Justin? Yeah.
Yeah, I'm here.
So, and they're making their little bit of $100 or whatever. And I'm like, you know, they make a little bit of money, but imagine all the sad kids out there who are not going to get what they want.
Justin. Oh, boy. Yeah, I'm here. Can you hear me?
Yeah. And I have totally went off topic, and we've talked about things that really have nothing to do with comics for the last 9 minutes.
Yeah, and I don't. Well, I think I can't relate to video games, but I think we can all relate to the horrors of shopping. And tis the season, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
I'm just dreading having to go shopping. Oh my God,
it's horrible.
I bought one present so far.
Are you going to write in your comic strips? Are you going to put any of that in your comic strips this shopping season?
Yeah, I have some Christmas stuff coming up.
Yeah, excellent.
Yeah, it's kind of some Christmas things I did before, but I'm going to rework them a little bit.
Yeah,
because I'm getting a more of a personal feel for my strip. I wrote like 12 or 13 strips this week.
Yeah,
wow. I've been on a roll, and I don't know. I'm feeling really good about it now that I just got to get time to draw the damn things, but I'm feeling good about the writing anyway.
That's great. Well, that's one of the hardest things for me is the writing. So if you can get that out, forget about it.
Well, the whole week I'm going to be in Japan all next week, so I'm not going to be able to do any drawing at all. But you know, if I can just keep the writing going, I'll be all right. Having a surplus of that. That comes and goes, that writing. That dries up after a while. You know,
it does.
The ideas. So I might throw them all out now.
That's right. Do it while you can. Hey, you know what? Tonight's show.
Yeah, let's get on with the interview.
Let's get on with the interview now. You did this interview, didn't you?
Yeah, I met Jerry Van Amerongen, who does Ballard Street.
Yeah,
it's a single panel, brilliantly drawn and executed strip. The guy's been doing it for nearly 30 years.
Yeah,
and he's a really interesting guy. He came out to give a little talk at the Schultz Museum, and I cornered him right before we had lunch, and the poor guy, I talked to him, and his food got cold, but he was really, really interesting.
Yeah.
And, here's a guy that he started out in the business world, and then he moved on to the commercial art world. Then he moved on to the cartooning world. This guy kept reinventing himself like every 10 or 12 years. I mean, you know, that's a true artist mentality, and I bring that out in the interview a couple of times. Because you know, we've talked to a lot of guys about their process, and but he's really coming at it from a different angle, and I really hope everyone gets a lot out of this interview, because it is a little different.
Absolutely, and let's play that interview now.
Sounds good.
All right, I'm sitting here with Jerry Van Amerongen. Can I say it right? Amerongen?
Amerongen,
okay.
Yeah. You said that's how I say it. My brother says it. He kind of gives up on it halfway through. He goes, Van Amerongen. He just kind of falls out of the entire back end of it.
Well, if you want to look him up, you can find him if you don't already know his name. He is the creator and writer of Ballard Street, syndicated by Creator Syndicate. And it is an honor to sit here and talk with you, Jerry. This is great. I'm a big fan.
Thank you. Yeah, appreciate it.
Now, you come from a business background originally, don't you, in the corporate world?
Yeah. I didn't get to this until I was 40, in 1980. So that really dates me. but that's, yeah, that's true. I graduated from college with a commercial art graphic design degree.
Mm-hmm.
That's about, and then I went into advertising art world for about 6 or 7 years and really ran out of gas on it. So I had a whole big social piece missing, and I knew that. So I sort of got involved in selling graphics, basically with a high school college yearbook company.
Hmm.
And so where we could actually sit and help their staffs design a book. So my forte was to help them design, help them lay it out, pay attention to photography, pay attention to their writing. And it was very successful. I went inside with them early and kind of did a lot of sales and marketing work with them. And was a marketing manager and a product manager of a couple different divisions. And I was just so in the middle of middle management and middle American corporate life you couldn't get any deeper in than I was. But somewhere around just a year or two of short of 1980, I could see the end of that one too. I was running out of gas there, so I wanted to get back to something creative, and cartooning was always something I did easier than other things when I was back at it, you know, when I was actually working in graphics.
And you worked in graphics before you got to the business stuff?
Yeah, I graduated in 63, so I went from 63 to 67. And in 67, I jumped ship and went into the corporate world.
What were you doing there in the early 60s?
Well, I was an art director for a small agency in Denver. I was in Denver, Colorado at the time, and I started out with the Mountain States Telephone in the Yellow Page art department.
How long were you in Denver? When did you...
I was there for quite a while. I was there from 63 to 76.
I used to go there every summer when I was
right?
a kid. My dad was a horse trainer.
No
and we
kidding.
Raced horses at Centennial.
No kidding. Well, yeah. Well,
we'd go up there every summer in Littleton. We lived in Littleton.
Well, all right. Now, you ready for this? My roommate, Eddie Bozine, was the track announcer at Centennial for maybe a year. But he also ran this magazine called Mountains and Plains Thoroughbred.
I'm sure my dad had several of those around the house.
He would occasionally get me to do a cover for him or something like that. He was the publisher of Mountains and Plains.
I had your work in my house. I didn't even
there you
know.
Go.
Wow, that's amazing. That is really new. Yeah, it's all gone now. Centennial's out. They gutted it. Got a bunch of condos in there now.
Yeah.
No trace of the track that used to be there.
It's a very different place.
Yeah, it sure is.
It was a fabulous place in the early 60s.
Yes.
All the way through the 60s, really.
Yeah, I left my heart in old Denver, to say the least.
Yeah, me too.
So back on track, so you quit... That world, what, you weren't making enough money, or you weren't
No, I really just truly ran out of gas on
yeah.
it. You know, I don't know that I was very focused. I'm right in the process of reading the Schultz biography right now, and the one thing that strikes me about that is that he was so focused on getting a cartoon syndicated mm-hmm. and or just being a cartoonist. And I thought, well, I'll be this if it's not too hard, basically.
Mm-hmm.
I think. I mean, I could be selling myself short. But so all the way along, I played football. I would come into my art class in high school all beat up from football practice. You know, I was sort of a little piece of everything. I was never just completely focused on doing that and to the detriment of anything else. So I just kind of wore out in a very short period of time, really, when you think about it, 63 to 67. I was already, you know, my work was deteriorating. I figured I'd better quit before I got fired.
Mm.
You know, one of those.
Yeah.
I also would do this artwork, and I would, hand it to the account rep who would take it out, and they'd come back with a client would sit down and change everything around. And I thought, you know, why would I want to be on the back end of this thing when I could be on the front end of it
mm-hmm.
And at least control the concept somehow? So I think a lot of that conspired to and then this piece about the social piece, that was sort of an important piece to me, too. I hardly knew how to, like, get along with, you know, in the working world,
yeah.
you know, outside, once you stepped out from behind your desk. So I thought I needed to be out and get cuffed around a little bit trying to sell something to somebody.
Yeah, that to change like that, you know, and it sounds like in your life you constantly just felt you've gotten to a point where you needed change, and you just did it. A lot of people don't. They wind up suffering through that and become miserable. Yeah. I give you full credit for knowing when to move on.
Yeah, thank you. Well, that's a nice thing to do, and then you also can look back on your life, and I wonder if when I left the neighborhood for Ballard Street, you know, that was, I don't know if that was a well-thought-out deal. It was just that I thought I was going to do this now, so I did it as impulsively as I did some of these other things.
Who syndicated in the neighborhood?
The neighborhood was syndicated. It ended up being King Features. But they let's see, what are they? They acquired Cole's Syndicate, which is who I signed with initially. The Des Moines Register and Tribune Syndicate. Is who I signed with, and then they were purchased by King, who I think was more interested in getting the Family Circus, which was at Des Moines Register and Tribune. So I came along with that whole package.
And why did you leave the neighborhood? I was going to ask you about this.
I really thought that there was two things. One, the only way you could get out from underneath the punitive contracts that were being signed then, because they basically owned the name, they owned the copyright, and, you know, characters. The 50-50 split was going on, and I wanted to slip out from underneath that. But also, I think that I wanted to do something a little different, and I thought I wanted to do a strip. I thought I wanted to get characters that were more definitive characters that I could just set personalities and then take my jokes or what I think is funny and then filter them through their personalities. So I did that, but it came out, the timing was all wrong. We made this change in, I'm not exactly sure of times anymore, but 1990, something like that. And that was during the first Gulf War. First Gulf War just cranked up, and then there was a huge paper shortage in the newspaper industry at that time. People were really sort of panicked. It was the first big, real panic in the newspaper business that things were really going to change. And it was just not the right time to come out with something. And particularly me, because I was in a number of papers. We had a list of 150, 60 papers, something like that. And those editors didn't want to see a strip coming back at them, and because they'd have to find room for it. And then on top of that, I would have to say, looking at that stuff now, it needed a little more development.
Mm-hmm.
So I probably pulled the trigger on that too quick.
I've never seen it. Was it a several panel strip or a single panel?
Well, I tried to do it as a multiple panel thing, and then I started to, when I could see that this was meeting resistance and we weren't getting anywhere near the syndication that we had before, I slowly started moving it into a single panel so that it became more of a long gag, strip shaped gag.
I see.
Panel, which is, you see a lot of that these days, and then some of the bigger papers are saying, yeah, they just kind of move it all the way back to a gag-shaped panel cartoon like you had, and I'm glad I did. It seems to be my natural voice, you know. I seem to have a grasp of that. So it was, I guess, creative reasons I made the change. But it didn't last too long. I really felt that I couldn't stay with it that long. So I think there's probably less than 2 years worth of that stuff out there somewhere. Mm.
And so you went from the neighborhood to Ballard Street. How long was that gap in between there?
Just long enough to get relaunched. It was probably less than 6 months, something like that. So it was, you know, we stopped the neighborhood and started this one sort of right up again. So it was, there was a gap in the papers by a number of months, but not. And to me, it was no gap. Yeah, I was, you know, working.
But you moved to a different syndicate, right?
and moved to a different syndicate.
Okay.
Yeah, that was, you know, at that point, Creator Syndicate was just on the market, and you could own the name, you could keep your rights. I kept my licensing rights, and I was doing a lot of licensing. So, so it was a much better situation. So in that sense, it was a good move to make.
So was it more editorial pressure or just your preference when you went, when Ballard Street went from kind of a strip format to a single panel? Because you did that Ballard Street for a couple of years to start as a strip format, right?
Yeah. It was me. I was thinking that I needed to pull it back a little bit, I think. But it was probably, I was hearing, you know, and I was seeing the resistance to what we were doing. So it was, so I don't know if you'd call that an editorial decision or my decision. Mm. It was a combination, I think.
Oh, okay.
So.
God, I just love your willingness to be flexible and change like that. I really, it's great.
Yeah, you know, sometimes you do that and it works, and you know, sometimes you do it and it doesn't work.
But the risk is always there, and you're still on top of it. How do you think syndicates have changed? I mean, you've been around this syndicates and stuff in newspapers for a few decades.
Yeah.
Now. What's different now than before, aside from the fear, like, oh my God, we're all going under?
Yeah, I think this is just me, and it's nothing scientific. But I think there's a noticeable lack of competition in the marketplace now for all kinds of reasons. One, you've got just far fewer newspapers. I mean, when I started in 1980, which seems like very recent history to me, 1980. There was still, in our town, Minneapolis, there was still two papers in Minneapolis, maybe two in St. Paul. At least two in Minneapolis, I know of, and then one in St. Paul. So you have three papers in our metro area, and every town in the country had several papers per community. So the competition was pretty intense, and so the syndicate people could go and say, you know, here's a new thing, and you ought to be, you know, snap it up before, because I'm going to have to take it across the river tomorrow. And a lot of people would buy stuff and just stick it on their shelves, and not even, they'd buy it so somebody else wouldn't have it. So it was that kind of a business when I started, and it quickly began to shift. And now I would say the difference in syndicates, I used to get the feeling that it's more... mechanical, you know, the sales forces and so on, and they go out and just do kind of I'm losing words here. I don't know how to really explain it. It just seems to me that it's not as efficient and not as you don't have as dedicated and. People from a historical standpoint, they can't come in and say, you know, this is a there are elements here in this new feature that that echo blah 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 from such and such and such, and it looks like, and this is a continuation of this kind of an idea, and it's got all this room to grow out here. They don't talk like that. They just say, here's three new things, and you know, this one will maybe cover your teenage market, and maybe this one will cover the dog lover market. And
it's all marketing.
And a lot of it is shipped out. You know, there are very many, as far as I can tell, the budgets have been severely chopped in the syndicate world for traveling sales reps. They might go out once or twice a year, but they used to travel all the time. They used to. So.
Damn.
I don't know if that answers your question.
Oh, it does. I'm going to put this on pause for a minute because the ambient noise in here is getting to be too loud. I want to take it outside. We're doing this interview at the Warm Puppy Cafe, which is next to the Schultz Complex, and it's getting popular. So hold on a minute. We'll be right back.
You see two or three warm puppies right now.
Okay, we're back. We're outside. Everything's fine.
Except for that squirrel.
You know what I wanted to ask you about that? I was looking at your work, and very often your human characters are behind glasses or something. You don't see their eyes for the most part. Mm-hmm. But I'm finding that more times I'm seeing your animals, you do see their eyes. I'm sure there's some kind of conscious choice, but why is it funnier in cartoons when we don't see the character's eyes in humans? What is that phenomenon?
I don't know exactly, except that it maybe puts a certain level of ambiguity, casts a certain level of ambiguity on their thoughts or their, what they're saying or something. I find that that's kind of what I'm ending up doing. It's not, mm-hmm. It's not like that I can't draw eyes.
Oh, no. But
that's a whole nother... An eye is a whole nother piece of information that, maybe if you didn't have that, it doesn't get in the way of whatever you're trying to do.
Mm-hmm.
But with an animal, it's interesting you say that. I guess, first of all, my characters or my stuff that I draw, it always has to... For me, it always needs to be slightly believable.
Mm-hmm.
So if a dog's got glasses on, they're going to be all askew and screwed up because, he hasn't got thumbs to be able to hook them on there right. So you might find a pair and try to mush them on, and they're going to look just like you found them and mushed them on, So with an animal, maybe you need a little more direction. So the eyes, maybe the eyes help.
I don't know, but I see it in very often in some of the funnier cartoons. I mean, even like Herman did that a lot. The Far Side certainly did a lot. A lot of their characters wore glasses, and and even Stefan Strip, the Pearls Before Swine. I mean, these characters have eyes, but they're like cold eyes.
They're like little pieces of coal, aren't they?
Yeah, they're coal eyes. They're lifeless eyes, like a doll's eyes,
Well, like Stefan.
but it works. Benign there. Mm-hmm. I don't know, maybe there's something psychological as the reader. We go to the eyes first that we don't know it, and that's a distraction to the joke. I'm not really sure, but it works. It still works.
Mm-hmm.
It's really funny, isn't it?
Yeah, that's been mentioned a couple of times to me recently, and I do think, every once in a while, I think to myself, geez, should I put another pair of glasses on this, or maybe I should actually prove that I can draw eyes.
Because sometimes you're stripped, when the characters need it, they do have them. And there was one I saw recently, your character took his glasses off and he had this very suspicious look in his eyes, but he nailed it. I mean, the eyes were just perfect. So,
I'd like to think that's the case, so.
This is an interesting phenomenon.
Yeah.
Are you syndicated in Europe, right? Beller Street's in Europe?
It's in some places in Europe, yeah.
How are you doing over there?
I think okay. I think we're okay in... I think I heard Sweden, there's something going on there. But I don't follow things quite like maybe I would have years ago. I just... keep my head down working.
I guess you have to. The schedule that cartoonists keep. How long does it take you to do one of those panels?
The only way I think I can answer that is I do seven of these, and sometimes I bunch up the process of coming up with the ideas instead of just every day trying to think of one. I'll do that differently. So however the week lays out, by the end of the week, starting on Monday and finishing hopefully on Friday night, I want seven of them done.
Mm-hmm.
And I maybe want also the color scheme for the Sunday done.
Do you color your own Sundays?
Yeah. I magic marker and overlay and I number them and I do it that way. I don't do it online and like some guys do, but
yeah, a lot of guys color on the computer.
Yeah, it's a good thing to do, but the computer for me is I'm just figuring out now how to attach something to an email.
Mm.
This is second and third level in for me.
Yeah,
technology. And
I get that.
I find that it just takes way more time to bring myself up to speed than I've got.
Yeah, it took me a long time. I resisted the computer for years and years. It wasn't until the very late 90s that I finally succumbed.
Well, I learned a lot just this recent, this year, because my brother's proficient on a computer, and he helped me put this book together that I'm here doing, and that all got delivered to the publisher in CD form, electronic file form, and so I went through a lot of the process that way. So I don't know that I could do it again on my own, and I needed all kinds of help from him to format it and get it figured out so things could drop in.
Well, now that you mentioned the book, I want to plug it. Jerry's new book is it's called Practicing People Skills. It just came out, right, this year?
Right, just this month.
It's great. Check it out. You probably get it on Amazon.
Get it Amazon. You could get it. Just go to BallardStreet.com. It's right up there, and right next to it is a little buy button. It couldn't be easier.
There you go. See all you lazy folks, it's easy as pie. Okay, we talked a little bit about the European market. You're in Europe. I mean, do you hear from your people who, like your editors from over there, or from your syndicate about what they're saying in Europe? I'm interested in how that market is different than here, and how they structure things over there.
You know, I wish I could give you some information on that. I don't know that I have it. I get emails, not a lot, but occasionally. You know, I just kind of they trickle along. From people from all over the world. I don't know what they're looking at. I don't know if they're picking this thing up on the internet. I don't know if it's somewhere in some local publication. But yesterday, actually before I came out here, I had this back and forth conversation with a guy from Cornwall, England, who had my stuff, had old greeting cards that I had done. And so he was there. I had a woman from Sweden on via email. But the editors, no, I don't hear from them. And my syndicate was, in fact, called me on Thursday, and they were at the Hamburg book show, and said that their rep, they were talking to their rep from the Netherlands, and she was talking about how the Dutch papers were wanting to buy Dutch cartoonists. And they of course, said, well, we've got a Dutch cartoonist. But they didn't realize that I'm first generation, so I might be able to put a biography together here that's going to get me into some Dutch papers. I don't know.
That would be great.
Yeah, that would be great.
That would really be nice to get into.
So I'm sorry. I can't give you any information.
Okay, well.
In fact, I don't think I'm that well represented in Europe.
Okay.
I think back in the neighborhood days, there were bigger things going on.
The Triplets of Belleville, the 2003 Academy Award nominated animated film from France, Belgium, and Canada, I think. The art style in that movie is so much like yours. Do you ever have people saying they rip you off?
When it came out, everybody was
really
all over it.
It's amazing.
Yeah, but I can't imagine that it was. You know, number one, I can't imagine that it was. But, you know, who knows?
Boy, that dog especially really looks like... Like that dog you draw. It's just it's scary.
Yeah, I don't know what to say about that. I loved the film.
It was really good.
I thought it was fabulous. I wished I would have done it, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, when you write your strips, how do you set aside a block of time to sit and write, or do you just kind of let things come to you as the day progresses and jot them down?
Well, I have these, I've done this a number of different ways over the years, and I'm about ready to maybe do it a different way again, because you get to a point, it's always, for me, it's like try to trick my mind into some space where it's going to be able to do this. And so sometimes when I move to a different environment or a different schedule, it seems to jumpstart things a little more, but I'm kind of this Midwest, you know, upper Midwest work ethic kind of thing that I'm saddled with. So I'm on a kind of a schedule. Mondays is my idea day. I spend the day away from the house because that's my normal environment all week long. I'm bouncing from coffee shop to coffee shop, public libraries, other places. Bookstores. I haunt used bookstores. That's another thing I do. But And I'm just kind of, sometimes I'm finding that by trying to concentrate on getting seven ideas out of a day, sometimes one idea feeds another idea, mm-hmm. feeds another idea. So it's a little, it somehow works a little better for me than just trying to come up with one idea on Monday morning and one idea on Tuesday morning, you know.
Yeah, you can't.
You bang away at that until you get some. So I do Monday for all the ideas, and then Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, I do two or three dailies on Tuesday. I do three dailies on Wednesday. I do the Sunday on Thursday. Hopefully I've got Friday open to do whatever licensing or painting or whatever other thing needs attention. Now, the last year or two, I don't know if I'm just getting old or getting distracted or what, it's getting harder to cram this thing in for me, and I don't know if I'm becoming more. I'd like to think I'm becoming more discerning about what I'm doing. So I'm going over things a little bit more. I'm changing things a little bit more. But then when I've got these things done, I do those. So I've got a week's worth of stuff done at the end of the week. What I'm concerned about is by the end of the month that I've got a month's worth of stuff. I don't send them in. I send them in once a month. And by keeping them around and then going back through them again a week or two later and having not seen them for a while, it boom, you know, maybe a cut line will be too jarring. It'll come up and it isn't working. You know, I thought I was too close to it before. Now it's not working so well. So right up until I mail them off, I'm still making little changes in the captions and things like that. So that's kind of the schedule. And the thing I was going to do today at the Schultz Museum with the slideshow is to suggest that almost half of what I do comes from sketches. I mean, the ideas.
Yeah, just drawing and doodling.
The doodle, things start to happen. You know, I have this little four in the book where I try to explain this to a comic person that if I do a face and it has kind of a... maybe a look to the face that suggests a certain body posture, and then I add the body or the body posture, or maybe the body posture starts first and then it suggests a certain face. But anyway, you got a figure there, and then that suggests that maybe something is in either whatever the character is doing, something is affecting that character, so you add that. Maybe it's a dog, maybe it's a piece of furniture, maybe it's something. And then you fill out a few other environmental details, which tells you, well, this thing's interior, not exterior, because there's got the example I use in the book is to put a lampshade on a dog's head. Well, that's interior, not exterior. So then you add some interior decor or environmental detail, and so then you look at it, and you've got this scene. And then you say to yourself, what in the hell's going on here? So at that point, I used to think, well, maybe this is almost cheating, you know. But at that point, you realize that your subconscious then starts to feed in all this, your attitudes, your emotions, your upbringing, your everything, into what your view of the situation is.
That is a true artistic process. When you don't map everything out at the beginning, you just let it go moment to moment and build it, like you just said, and there you've got something that's uniquely yours. That is so hard to do. When you're a beginning cartoonist, you're constantly doubting, you don't trust, but there it is. I mean, just do that. You know, you're not really... The thing about being a beginning cartoonist, a lot of guys get wrapped up and I have to act like a professional and what they think a professional is. I have to, you know, map out my frames exactly the way the pros do. I have to use this kind of pen because the pros do that. I have to write it first, then strictly draw it exactly the way I thought of it before and not change, and that's what I do, and that's why they get rejected. Mm-hmm. This free process that you just outlined is what everybody should be doing until they can finally pin something down, but you got to go through that first.
Yeah, I think so. I'm very happy with how that all has transpired. I don't know how much I was doing of that either at the very beginning.
Yeah.
But maybe I was. I haven't really thought it all the way through that far.
That's definitely the way to go. That's beautifully outlined.
You almost hear writers talking like this. You know, I got this character, I developed him, I figured he was going to go here, mm-hmm. but he started to go there.
Exactly.
You know, and he took over. Mm-hmm. You know, and you think, wait a minute, huh? What are you saying? But it's true.
Mm-hmm. I'm sure Sparky would say the same things. I mean,
I was just over there this morning, waiting for us to get together, and he had some sketches there that they were talking about that had been pulled out of the trash that he, you know, he did a lot of scribbling and sketching.
Oh,
which brought him to the beginning of an idea. And then you move down the track from there.
One of his greatest quotes is that if you're ever stuck for an idea, start doodling.
Yeah.
You know, and I really took that to heart. You know, of all the times I've gone over there and things I've read, that quote particularly stuck with me.
Yeah.
To the point where I look at his strips now constantly for images and stuff while I'm at work, and I so often will see a visual gag and go, boom, there it is. That's where that strip started with mm-hmm. that goofy little... Mm-hmm. Usually it's Snoopy doing something wild.
Yeah. Yep.
You know, later on it became Woodstock doing something interesting. And that he wound up creating a strip around that. You know,
it's kind of
through the back door.
You do a drawing of something and you say, oh, this is just too good not to use something on this. You know, something's got to lead up to this or something's going to happen after this.
Yeah.
You know?
That's very exciting, the whole artistic process. I'm just fascinated by it. And a lot of it is just letting go.
Yeah.
Over at it, right?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, I think the listeners would be well advised to do that.
Yeah, and I would too. In my strip, I overthink it way too much too. It's a hard temptation.
Yeah.
You know, you want to do it right. You want to have people like you, and you know, I guess I have to remind myself I'm in a place right now where I'm allowed to fail. You know, if I were syndicated, I wouldn't have that freedom, mm-hmm. and you know, now's the time to do that.
Well, and you do have the, you know, then all of a sudden, if you are syndicated or if you're doing anything that's got some kind of an audience out there, mm-hmm. you do start to think, well, if I was doing this for myself, I might let this one go without a caption, but I almost don't dare.
Yeah.
You know, there's going to be people close to this that will be able to read this just the way it is, but I need to add a little something to this just to... So you do, you know, it's still a commercial, we're still in a kind of a commercial art field, you know, we're doing this for an audience, so you do occasionally have to, but it's way good to get to that by starting out big and then coming back and...
You got to know yourself.
Crimping it a little bit,
I want to talk about, since we're talking about artistic stuff.
Can I grab it?
Absolutely.
Yeah. He's now eating a garden, what is this?
Garden burger that's quite
burger.
Cold.
Yeah, cold garden.
I'm sorry. With
no ketchup. Jesus.
I can run and get you some ketchup. It's no problem. I saw on your website that you have painted these marvelous paintings, and I've never seen the word before. Maybe I'm an idiot, but is it pronounced Gicle or Gicle prints?
Gicle.
Gicle.
French. Gicle, and it's all kind of computer generated. You take a scan. Basically, you scan your artwork. These are really high-res scans.
Mm-hmm.
You load it up on the computer. You do color correcting. Once you've got the color correcting just the way you want it, maybe it looks exactly like the painting, hopefully. They lock it in, and then it's kind of order them up by when you need them. So those paintings that you saw, we've got those set up as limited edition prints. So we're doing like 90 of each, and so when somebody orders one, then you can go to your printer and say, okay, give me another one of those.
Mm-hmm.
And we're printing, and you can print them on anything, any kind of paper quality. And in my case, I'm printing them on canvas, so they're on stretcher bars,
wow.
canvas, so it looks like the original mm-hmm. painting. And then the process, as I understand it, is a acrylic dye. It's run by like a big seven color Epson top end printer. So they're sprayed on. It's not a photographic process. These things are actually spray painted. So when you look at it, you think, wow, this is pretty fabulous. looks very real.
They're amazing looking. Yeah. I know I was looking at I think you have about 9 of them up on your website. Is it ballardstreet.com?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And, you know, the thumbnails are there, and you click on the thumbnails, and this beautiful painting comes up, which is basically one of your cartoons, but it's beautifully rendered in these colors that, you know, they kind of reminded me, not that they look like French Impressionism, but they struck that kind of a chord in me, and I think maybe because the colors are so vivid or something, but... It's particularly this one where they had the commuters, these guys in business suits, and they're all on a subway. And the perspective that you used on that somehow, there was so much movement. It looked like these, like a French Impressionist paintings of these outdoor cafes. I'm not sure if it was Renoir, but I'm not really sure the name. I should have looked it up. So I would have sounded smarter.
Bob.
Yeah, these French Impressionist paintings. Bob
the Impressionist.
But there's all this movement, and there's a lot of going on. And yet there's not a lot going on, but you get them, you still feel the movement. And that particularly really...
Well, you're very kind about that.
The listeners just got to go look at these. I mean, they're very interesting. But, you know, some of the other ones particularly, too, they had a heart to them that you don't usually see in cartoons. And I don't know if it would have, if they were just black and white line drawings, it would have registered that much. But they were somewhat sensitive. I mean, there was the guy that stepped off the... path to stand in the grass, and then the guy looking around the corner at the staircase that said heaven.
Yeah.
I mean, those have some kind of emotional impact, don't you?
I think so, yeah. I mean, certainly I was picking them because, one, they would stand alone without some kind of a cut line or title hanging under them, and they were things that I kind of wanted to do. And I also had... been doing a little studying with a plein air landscape painter over in our neck of the woods, a very good one, back in just about the 2000, somewhere in there. So some of those were using that kind of, and he had this wonderful palette, this kind of, that, so some of that is using that palette that would be used for landscape painting.
Oh, I see.
And bringing it into, and then I thought, well, you know, it might be worthwhile to just take a plain old cartoon and try to paint it as well as you could.
Mm. Well, it definitely worked.
And bring it, you know, and then just using scale and using a painterly style, hopefully it would elevate it and move that image into some other level.
It did. It goes to a way new level, and I hope everybody listening to this goes and checks those out. You see where cartooning could be. What else are you going to talk about today on your speech?
Well, this is just going to be, I think, the only thing I can talk about with any assuredness is just what I do, how I go about it. And so a lot of what we're talking about right now, I've got some examples of how some of the sketching comes up to a final piece. I did this for a little breakout session at the National Cartoonist Society meeting this past May. So when I was thinking about needing to do that, I was pulling some things off the table where I could see a thread of, okay, there's the little rough sketch over there, and here's the sort of pencil over here, and here's the final inking over here, and it changed here and here and here, and so that might be kind of nice to talk about. So I put a few of those in.
That's great.
And then some of the rest of it, it's just cartoons I picked out that I like for one reason or another, and I'm just going to explain why I like them for one reason or another.
Great. I'm looking forward to it.
Thank you.
Is there anything else you'd like to add that I didn't cover?
No, I don't think so.
Okay, yeah, we did cover a lot of things. I know we were all over the place, but you're such an interesting guest. This has been Jerry Van Emmerungen.
Emmerungen.
Yep. And his new book is Practicing People Skills. So please pick that up and go to the website, ballardstreet.com, to see what the heck I'm talking about with these paintings, okay? Jerry, thank you again so much.
Hey, thank you very much.
Wow, that was a great interview. I'm glad you tracked him down and made him do that.
Thanks, Brian. And if anybody has any questions about what was said on that interview or anything, please go to our website and make comments on that little, what would you call that, a little blog entry section for that show or
yeah,
whatever?
That's our blog. That's our blog. Go check it out at comicscoast2ghost.com.
Right, comicscoasttocoast.com. Write in, give us comments, and I'll be able to answer questions about them and maybe elaborate on some of the stuff that I stumbled over in the interview.
Yeah.
But anyway, that's
That is truly inspiring. I love hearing it. That is just truly inspiring. I love to hear interviews like that.
It really is, isn't it? I mean, you hear a guy who's a real artist.
Yeah.
You know, and he's really, you know, he's kind of like a no-nonsense. I don't want to say he's no-nonsense because he was a fun guy.
Yeah, yeah.
But he's got a serious, maybe it's a dignity about him. Maybe that's what it was, a dignity about him that, I don't know.
Yeah.
It was just a little different.
Absolutely. You know? I agree.
It was nice.
He's wise. Like, wow, he's wise. Yeah, that's it. He's, you know, he's... Nice.
Yeah. I had to climb up on top of a mountain to sit with him and talk to him, actually.
Excellent. Hey, you got a comic pick of the week for us?
I do. It's over on Sherpa, where I used to live.
Yeah.
ComicSherpa.com. Look it up. It's Winsor and Albert, W-I-N-S-O-R, and Albert by Matthew Thompson. He's no relation to me.
Yeah.
We've done his strip before as a comic strip theater way back when we kind of started this show.
Absolutely.
Yeah. But I've been looking at it again, and I really want him to get some more attention because I think it's one of the more beautiful strips on Sherpa. The characters are great. It's unbelievably beautifully illustrated. Go check that out, Winsor and Albert, and give him some feedback.
He'd love that.
I don't think he gets much feedback. I think it's terrible.
Yeah.
He doesn't.
Matter of fact, I think I'll go over there and I will leave him some feedback.
Okay, great.
Let's do it now. Let's do it on the show. You can hear me type it. I'm kidding.
Okay.
Tick, 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 tick. I really love your work.
I will not. I won't be with the show next week. I have to be in Japan for the week.
That's right.
So I think there'll probably be a guest host for the third mic.
Yeah, and it'll probably be some kind of Canadian. Possibly. We're gonna try to get the other. It's not really a coast up there, is it?
You get William Shatner?
What's that?
Don't you get William Shatner?
There you go. I'd love that.
William Shatner. I want to talk to William Shatner.
Wouldn't you kill us if you did that? I can't believe I'm
on this show. Get a life. What are you people spending your lives with?
Love it. But you're going to Japan for shells again, right?
Yes.
I
got another business seminar to attend and deliver a speech, and I got a lot of meetings all week, and it's going to be another hell week in Japan. Yeah. And I don't want to sound like I'm not grateful, or I know it's very cool to go there.
Yeah.
This is my fifth time there, but man,
it's starting to get old.
I miss my miss my family so much when I'm over there, and I know that sounds so boring to anybody who doesn't have a family. But if you do have a family, you know what I'm talking about,
especially this time of year, man.
I mean. Oh, my God, it's all Christmas.
Yeah.
And it's not, you know, you can get away from your family for a week.
Yeah.
That's one thing. But to be on the other side of the world, there's something about the distance.
It is. Well, I mean, if something happened, it would take so long to get back. That's a scary
one. Yeah, something usually does.
Yeah, yeah. Gonna get robbed.
Does happen.
The water heater's going to bust. They won't fly your whole family with you?
No, God, you know how much it costs? It's thousands and thousands of dollars to drag my fat ass over there and back every time. It's unbelievable.
That is great.
Yeah,
I love
can't believe the money, but I guess it does some good. I don't know. Yeah. I hope so.
Well, I'm sure it does. So do you ever get to go any other places besides Japan? Do you ever get to go to China?
No, not yet. They've talked to me about it, and I really don't want to.
Yeah, yeah.
I really want nothing to do with China at all.
Yeah.
They want you
to go to the Iraq. Oh, okay, for political reasons, okay.
But if, you know, if they ask me to go, I'll go. I mean, you know, I'm a company guy and all, and I'll do what they need to do. But not wild about going.
So when you go to these things, do you dress up?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Do you put on, like, do you have, like, the Charlie Brown ties and stuff?
You know, I do.
Yeah.
I have some ties. They have little Charlie Brown or Snoopy prints on them, and you can't even tell from a distance, but
really?
You're close and they're there. So, yeah, I'll throw those together.
I actually have about four or five Snoopy ties. Well, not necessarily Snoopy,
but cool.
Peanuts ties, yeah.
I wonder if I approved them.
I don't. Probably so. You probably have. Huh. Yeah, I love my Charlie Brown ties. Charlie Brown. I keep calling it that. Charlie Brown, Snoopy. It's Peanuts. Peanuts, people. But anyway.
But anyway, that's why I won't be here tomorrow. Next week, I'll be working. So yeah. I'll be downloading the show from overseas to hear it.
Absolutely.
How you guys do.
Oh, we'll have fun. And hopefully Tom will be back. All
right.
He won't be dragging and being sick and stuff. So looking forward to that. Hey, thanks for being on the show tonight, Justin. I really do appreciate it. And like you would miss it. And once again, thanks for that great interview. We always love those things, man. You get some of the greatest interviews. You're in such a great spot to meet all these great guys. And really do appreciate that.
Yeah, I think this is an important show.
Yeah.
I really do. I bust my butt for it. I think it's important for cartoonists to hear from these other guys.
Yeah.
And, you know, have these questions answered and learn how editors work and learn how their favorite cartoonists, create stuff. And
yeah.
I mean, I've learned a lot just from doing the show. I've learned
me too.
Whole lot about my strip, and I've been applying it.
Yep.
And so I hope other people find it interesting too.
I've totally changed my outlook on what I'm doing. Since we've listened to probably in the last 10 episodes, my whole outlook on and what I want to do and what direction I want to go in has totally changed. So, yeah, I think it's a big influence. Thanks again, Justin, for being on the show, and have a good, safe trip over there in Japan. And go visit the site at Comics Coast to Coast. You may be wondering why I'm talking by myself now. It's because Justin got dropped. But do check out the website at comicscoasttocoast.com. You can also check out Justin's website at mythtickle.com. You can check out my website at missiondeep.com. And I don't think Tom is doing anything right now. You probably can still go see some of his stuff over at Comic Sherpa and check out Booksmarts. That's right. All right. And we'll see you guys next week.
Thank you. Carry you.